Welcome to the debut episode of College Football 134, the new covers podcast delving into every inch of college football. We will talk plenty about Florida State, Ohio State, and Oklahoma, but we're going to spend just as much time betting on Appalachian State, Jacksonville State, and so much of the MAC. There are 134 teams in the top tier of college football, and if you can understand a little bit of all 134 of them, you can understand the world. I am Douglas Farmer. That is my good friend, Andrew Cayley, and we should stop talking and start gambling and start getting into talking college football. Andrew, how you doing today?
I am so excited, Doug. We have been at covers doing college football for a long time. You coming in to support me in terrible wedding decisions and baby timing mishaps. And now we're here. They've let us do this. I'm so excited, buddy, that we actually get to talk college football and bet college football, and hopefully you guys can follow along, have some fun, and maybe win some money while we're at it.
I do hope you'll be around. You don't have another wedding this football season, do you?
I do not. No, I got my weddings out of the way this summer. I heard you might have a wedding this
Well, this it's not fall, mine. Though. That's the difference. You chose to get married and have a honeymoon in a football season because, you know what, I shouldn't get into relationship advice.
I'm going to say that I love my wife very much, and I'm very happy, mother of my child. I did not pick that October wedding date, and if I had my way, maybe it would have been something a little different. I love you, honey. Please, please don't watch this very first inaugural episode of ours,
but
actually watch
it. Please
watch. Please watch. Share it with all of it. She has a huge Instagram following, so like, let's get her to share it, please, please.
It is a short week this weekend. Only four games, including the FBS teams. Week zero lets us ease into the weekend action. Before we get to a couple of picks for Saturday, which we will be live Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern time, really getting into the week zero slate. So we're not going to worry so much about that today. We are instead going to talk about a few of our favorite futures, focusing on conference action and some win totals. But as we get into those, Andrew, I want you to start slowly. What is a future or a win total you want us to start off with that you have some confidence in?
You said start slowly, and I'm like, here's a controversial one to go right off the bat. Covers 134. I'm going with Texas under 10.5 wins this season. Minus 178 at FanDuel is the number I found. That's the best number I found right now. 10.5 is just too high for me at this point for the Longhorns. If there is a team that can make this transition to the SEC, it's probably Texas. Quinn Ewers came back, probably the best QB room in the country. Arch Manning backing him up. They're the only team from the playoff last year that returns its head coach this year. They have an elite offensive line, but the talent level in the SEC just goes up a little too much for me to say, like, hey, this is going to be an 11-1 team this season. There's a lot of really good teams in there in the SEC this year, and the schedule makers didn't really give the Longhorns much of a break for their inaugural SEC season. They open conference play at Mississippi State, which is, of course, I would say a winnable game. But then it's the Red River Showdown because Oklahoma joined them in the SEC too. And that game is always a toss-up every single year. Then they've got number one Georgia. And then they've got games like Florida and Kentucky. I'm not going to call those cakewalks. I would say that Texas should win those games, but not exactly 100% are going to win those games. And then it's the renewal of the Texas A&M rivalry, and they're going to Kyle Field to end the season. And for years, people were talking about, will Texas A&M? They recruited really well under Jimbo Fisher. Jimbo now gone, obviously, but that talent is still there with Mike Elko now, the head coach. Not a lot of people talking about Texas A&M. That could be a really good football team there this year, playing in Kyle Field. They're going to be up for that game. On top of that, playmakers this season are down for Texas. No Xavier Worthy, no Adonijn Mitchell, even Tavion Sanders, all the NFL. CJ Baxter already injured for the season, torn Achilles. That really sucks for them. But the biggest hole for me, and one of the biggest reasons I like the under here, is the hole on that defensive line that's left by Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat. They created, and we talked about this in our national championship and playoff stuff last year. They were one of the reasons I like Texas in the playoffs because they were creating all that interior pressure, and they did that better than anyone in the country. And I don't think people are respecting that loss enough, and losing those guys is really going to hurt them in their SEC, their first SEC season. So 10.5, big number. I don't think 10-2 is a bad season for the Longhorns. Oh, there's also a non-con game against Michigan at Michigan. So I just think 10-2 or even 9-3 is probably more likely than an 11-1 season for the Longhorns here. So that's why I like the under 10.5.
It's really a pretty simple bet. In those four games of note at Michigan versus Oklahoma versus Georgia and at Texas A&M, you're saying Texas will not go 3-1 or 4-0. It's not – like, when you phrase it that way, it's a pretty simple way to approach it. And even if they start 2-1, they're going to go to A&M as, let's say, touchdown favorites, maybe not even touchdown favorites in all of reality. On the road, there'll be 5 or 6 point favorites. You'll have a hedge opportunity if you really want it in that position. Yeah. It'd be tough given the juice on this, but there are ways to look at it. And that's not even getting into the possibilities of upsets, like you said, Florida and Kentucky in particular.
Yeah, exactly. So Texas, like, they're the team that could do it if any, but really tough schedule, really tough spot for them, and just some key pieces gone for them, which I think would have really helped them in the SEC. So, Doug, what do you got for us?
I'm gonna go a bit more ambitious.
Okay, let's hear it.
I am looking at Conference USA, and everybody in the world assumes Liberty is gonna run away with it. Everybody in the world assumes Liberty should have a very good chance of making the College Football Playoff. And I keep looking at Rich Rodriguez, and I think he's a reputation to uphold. He runs the ball. The Jacksonville State ran the ball more often last season than all but the service academies. That is absurd. And that is the reason I am taking Jacksonville State to win Conference USA at +750 at FanDuel. And a big part of this is realizing Jacksonville State's two primary worries in Conference USA, Western Kentucky and Liberty, are both atrocious against the run. They had been for a while. They were last season. Western Kentucky's expected points added per rush against last year ranked 124th in the country. And again, this is College Football 134. You don't want to be 124 out of 134. Liberty ranked number 99. It wasn't all that much better. Liberty will almost certainly make the Conference USA Championship game. And I realize this. They get both Western Kentucky and Jacksonville State at home in the back half of the season. But Jacksonville State's rush offense raises its floor high enough that I really do feel it is just as likely to make Conference USA Championship game, at which point I'll be sitting on a +750 future. I will be delighted with that. I don't care what the hedge opportunity would be. If I'm sitting on a +750 future on Conference Championship weekend, I will always embrace that possibility. It is entirely because Rich Rodriguez is always going to run the ball. One other fact I wrote down here, and now, Andrew, I know you like reading Phil Steele. He projects Jacksonville State to have the fourth most productive rush offense this season. Frankly, of that is because of their opponents, even the two best ones in their conference.
Yeah, I like that a lot. +750. Wow. And yeah, it's going to be a fun season in Jacksonville State, I think. Rich Rodriguez always brings it, you know.
He does. That's why we're glad to have him back cooking around.
Yeah, exactly. I think he's kind of recovered from his whole Michigan stuff. So, yeah, I really like the way he gets his players playing for him. So, really like that play from you there, Doug.
Now, you are going to stay in the relative southeastern half of the country.
Yeah, but they might as well not be, right? Like, they're probably like, what, a mid-tier Sunbelt team? Is that what you would say?
Oh, I'm going to spend part of the next few minutes trying to figure out. I don't want to spoil what you're going to pick. I'm gonna shut my mouth. You go ahead. But I am going to spend the next few minutes trying to figure out where in the Sunbelt.
Where in the Sunbelt would Vanderbilt be? I'm going with the Vanderbilt Commodores to go over 2.5 wins. Yes, it is juiced to -200, but I'm going to tell you why that juice is worth the squeeze. One, we're talking about stability. Clark Lee's fourth year with the program here. He gets another guy like Rich Rodriguez. He gets his guys to play for him. He gets the most out of his players, and you need to at a program like Vanderbilt, tougher school to get into than most of the SEC schools. So he doesn't have the luxury of getting some of the best guys in the transfer portal like some of the other schools in this conference. But that said, he has 15 returning starters this year, and the one transfer he did get is quarterback Diego Pavia. He's a senior transfer from New Mexico State, and he made me a ton of money with the Aggies last season. He's a 5'9" dual threat tank. The guy can do it all. Almost 3,000 yards passing, another 1,000 yards rushing. I think he had 35 total touchdowns or something like that 11-2 New Mexico State went against the spread last season, and Pavia was a big reason, right? Also went to the CUSA title game. So there's another guy Jacksonville State won't have to worry about in that conference this year. Pavia's offensive coordinator, Tim Beck, also followed him to Nashville, so you can expect a similar offense at Vandy this season. Then there's the non-conference schedule, that, and this is what really turned me on to this number. We've got Alcorn State, Georgia State, and Ball State. So those games alone, like Georgia State is the only one that's a little more questionable, but they should be at the bottom of the conference this year. So I think this number should be 3.5. There are some threes starting to pop up. I've seen a three over at DraftKings, but they're mostly still 2.5s with all heavy juice. SEC schedule, obviously very difficult. They went 0-8 in conference play last season, but that won't bother Pavia. He went into Auburn last season, if you don't forget, and upset the Tigers as 25-point underdogs. And it wasn't like a close game. They crushed. New Mexico State crushed Auburn. So he knows how to handle that situation, and they play Auburn this year as well. So I like Vandy to be at least competitive in that game in their SEC matchups. Maybe Kentucky. Who knows what you're going to get from South Carolina this year as well. Their win total, I think, is 5.5. And I've seen people be like, oh, I love the over. And other people like, oh, I love the under. Like, it's all over the place with South Carolina, I think, this year. So I'm more than willing to lay this juice on the over 2.5 with Vandy.
I did just go looking. I would put Vanderbilt as maybe the number 6 or number 7 team in the 14-team Sun Belt. And you mentioned Georgia State. Georgia State is in the bottom half. But with that game on the road at Georgia State, it might be close to a pick 'em. And so in this win total, which you and I discussed briefly this morning, I am with you on it. I like it a lot. That is the biggest worry. Can they get that needed win at Georgia State? Because Alcorn State and Ball State, that's your two. And it's can you win on the road at Georgia State? Or, and I mean, was it 2 years ago when Clark Lee put it to South Carolina? Like, Clark Lee has had some good SEC games.
Florida, too. He's got a Florida win. Like,
nowhere near competing in the SEC on a consistent basis, but he can coach up one or two wins. Auburn might have a down season, relatively speaking. South Carolina, you mentioned some of these. This is very much possible. But even if it's not, they're going to be favored or a pick 'em in three games. This is the juice here, as you opened with. The juice is worth the squeeze. I like this thought.
Thank you very much. Let's go, Vandy.
I am going to continue being more, should I say more ambitious than you? I think I'm going to say I'm being more ambitious than you, because I'm going to. Well, it's
what we're going to do here a little more, right?
If you want to sit on Neg 200 juice for the next 4 months, you can do that. I'm going to sit on a plus 650 conference future. And again, part of the thought is if worst case scenario, I get to conference championship weekend with a hedging opportunity, I can be quite content with that. I will not mind at all. Now, this is becoming a trendy pick. I am taking UNLV to win the Mountain West. That's available at plus 650 at BetMGM. I was looking around literally 20 minutes before we recorded this Tuesday afternoon of week 0, and some books are as low as 5-1. So clearly I'm getting good value on the number. Why is it becoming a trendy pick? Well, first of all, the offense is a joy. The receiver combination of Ricky White III and Jacob DeJesus would be a worthwhile power four receiver combination. They haven't settled on a quarterback yet, but they have a few weeks before conference play to make that decision and really kick the go-go offense into gear. That's becoming the talking point, and I understand that. But that's not why I'm making this bet. I am making this bet because UNLV has a little bit of a scheduling quirk. The Mountain West, by folding in Oregon State and Washington State in this partnership, so to speak, there were only 7 conference games for all teams in the Mountain West. UNLV has to play the other two best teams in the conference, Boise State and Fresno State. And I think that's an advantage because their other 5 games are against the dredges of the Mountain West. If UNLV can win one of those games, both at home, both in Vegas, win one game at home against Boise State or Fresno State, UNLV should be set for 6-1 in the conference, also holding a tiebreaker over one of the other teams contending for the conference title. I think that's scheduling an opportunity here with the go-go offense creating some variance. And again, both those games are at home. I think that all sets up UNLV to have an inside track to reach the conference championship game. They're playing the weak parts of the Mountain West, while Fresno State faces two of the – so there's there's a three contenders, UNLV, Fresno State, Boise State. There are six disasters. And then there's the three in the middle, Wyoming, Air Force, and Colorado State. Well, yeah. Fresno State gets two of them. Boise State has to go to Wyoming. Those are scheduling disadvantages for those other conference contenders. That's what I'm looking at this. Saying you're going to make a conference championship bet based on a schedule, it's not fun. It's not sexy. Doesn't mean it's wrong. Doesn't mean plus 650 doesn't make sense. I'm doing that because you have two games at home, win one, and you're in the conference championship game. That is that simple to me.
It's going to be a really interesting year in the Mountain West this year, I think. I don't know. I feel like Air Force always disappoints when it matters most.
And they're really interesting. They are replacing more than any other team in the country. Troy Calhoun has said he's replacing more of his team than he has any year since he started in 2007.
That's crazy. That's so crazy. And the big news out of Boise State this week was the quarterback decision. What's his name out of USC didn't win the job. And now it's.
I think some of that writing was on the wall because when Lincoln Riley says a quarterback isn't very good, I'm going to take his judgment. Lincoln Riley has a lot of flaws, but he's better at evaluating quarterbacks flaws than I do. Than
not
I am.
Quarterbacks. Quarterbacks are his thing, I would say. So there you go. Mountain
now,
West.
Andrew, you are going to take us out of the group of five. We're just going to keep going back and forth like this. Let this be how covers college football 134 covers it. You worry about the Power Four, and I will sit here and just enjoy the beauty that is the group of five.
Okay, well, so this time I am going with Indiana over their win total of 5.5. You can get that at -135 at Bet365. Bit of a Canadian bias here, I'm going to say. Our guy Rourke, he transferred from Ohio, and he's ready to go for Kurt Cignetti's team now, who came over from James Madison, had a great season with the Dukes, obviously. He brought a bunch of his staff, particularly his defensive staff, and now he's got a really, really good quarterback in Rourke. We saw him let Jordan McLeod let it fly with the Dukes last year. I think Rourke is probably a better passer than McLeod is. He threw for nearly 7,700 yards and 50 touchdowns in his time at Ohio. And then we've got another team with an easy non-con schedule here. FIU, Western Illinois, Charlotte. So those should be three wins for the Hoosiers. On top of that, I think Purdue, Northwestern, Michigan State. And even going to UCLA this year, there's another team that I just don't have a really good read on. I'm hearing things like they could be one of a surprise team in the Big Ten in their first Big Ten season, or they could be maybe the worst team in the whole conference. So they are in LA, but that's what we know about UCLA right now. Thank you, Deshaun Foster. But I really think there's a lot of opportunity here for Rourke to be successful. I really like that receiving core he has there as well. I have this as a 7-5 team this year. So when I see 5 and 5.5, I'm hitting that over all day. You're muted there.
There is a Big Ten win there. You did not mention that. I'm real low on Washington. Indiana getting Washington at home is something that should be baked into this thought of yours. Mm. And if that meant for you to have confidence in over 5.5, for you to say they're a 7-win team and to not have even mentioned a game that I'm sitting here thinking, you know, Indiana is going to be dangerous for Washington. That reinforces that there is something here to be looked at. And compared to some other choices you've made, not that much juice.
thank you. Yeah, that Washington pass defense probably isn't getting better this season, and obviously lost a lot of their offensive talent in the offseason with Penix getting drafted and all of those receivers gone as well. So really interesting time to watch, and really like this play. Like I said, a little Canadian bias for Mr. Rourke there, but I think he's gonna have a good season in Indiana.
You know, Michael Penix is usually referred to in tandem with somebody else, and Bo Nix is no longer with us in college football realms. You have some thoughts about his replacement.
Yeah, I thought our first show here should have at least one season-long prop, and one that stood out on the board to me was Dylan Gabriel, who now plays for Oregon, to go over 3,250.5 passing yards this season. This is really, really simple for me. If Dylan Gabriel plays 12 games this season, he goes over this number. I think for my money, Dylan Gabriel is a better college quarterback than Bo Nix. And Dan Lanning did some amazing things with Bo Nix. He ended up throwing for 3,500 and then 4,500 yards, threw 45 touchdowns and 3 picks last year, obviously. An incredible season for Bo Nix. And I saw it happen last year, but I still can't get Auburn Bo Nix out of my head. Like, he cost me quite a bit of money when he was with the Tigers. And to see what Dan Lanning did with him, and now he gets Dylan Gabriel, I think this is a pretty easy bet for me to make. Gabriel went over this number in 3 of his 4 full seasons playing in his college career. The one he didn't was that first weird year in Oklahoma where they were just kind of all over the place and losing games they shouldn't be losing. I believe it was Venable's first year as the head coach there, and
he still came within 100 yards of it.
Yes, he still did. So this offense is going to be tailored to Gabriel. He's got some really good receiving weapons with that new team. He might have the best offensive line in the country. You can make that argument as well. So they should keep him healthy and upright there. I really like this play.
You know, our good friend and colleague, John Mettler, had me on Before You Bet a few weeks back. And John wanted to get me riled up. And so he asked me if Shedeur Sanders should be the number one overall draft pick, if Shedeur Sanders should win the Heisman, blah, 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 blah. Shedeur Sanders, Colorado, nonsense. And I got to talking to John about actual college football conversation rather than highlights and hype. And I pointed out that Bo Nix never completed more than 61% of his passes at Auburn. And then the last 2 seasons at Oregon, he went 71.9 and 77.4. Dan Lanning very much created an offense to Bo Nix's struggles. And if Dan Lanning needs to do that again, he can. But even aside, Dylan Gabriel already approaches 70% in 2 of his last 3 seasons. Dylan Gabriel is a much more accurate quarterback than Bo Nix will ever be. And that should uncork that much more of Oregon's offense.
Yeah. Yeah, really like, and he's getting some action in the Heisman market right now. I just saw today he's been moved to like 7-1 and is the favorite in a bunch of places now to win the Heisman.
Well, we can talk about that Saturday live at 9 a.m. Eastern here.
On there.
134. Before that, I want to, you discussed some Canadian bias, that Indiana pick. I have some Douglas Farmer bias in my next pick.
Love it.
I'm going to take a win total. I just got fed up with the pixie dust and fugazi of Louisville football last season. It was nonsense. That team was not good. Yes, they opened 10-1. They then went 0-3 in 3 games. They were twice favored by a touchdown and once a 1-point underdog. That was who Louisville was. They got to 10 wins by things like Georgia Tech collapsing in the second half of the season opener, 2 Louisville field goals off short fields providing the difference. You needed Indiana to not score more than 14, which, yes, it's Indiana, but still, this is what Louisville was last season. It really, if you remove explosive plays, was a country average team in scoring, averaging 3.58 points per quality drive. They lived on explosive plays. But now Louisville returns only 2 starting offensive linemen, little else on the offense. Jeff Brohm's design is going to struggle this season. Logic says the breaks are not all going to go Louisville's way again. Yes, 8 is a lower number. Douglas, they went 10-4 last year. 8's not that much of a lower number. And the fact of the matter is you can get this at 8.5 for 50 or 60 cents more. I am finding value in risking a push. Louisville is going to be favored in 7 games this season. They'd have to win all of those and spring 2 upsets to cost me this bet. And after last year's variance all went the Cardinals' way, I am willing to bet Jeff Brohm is in for a reality check back at his alma mater.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough season. Like you said, those offensive linemen not there, but now you also don't have the top 2 backs there and not running the football there either. So it's going to be interesting times for Louisville in an ACC that I think is getting better this season, or will be better than it was last season, at least, more than anything.
Except for this one team.
Exactly.
Now, Andrew, that is the bulk of our futures, our look-aheads, however you want to phrase it. But we should discuss week 0 a little bit here, because we have 4 games, and we should try to get people to care enough to come live 9 a.m. Eastern on Saturday morning. What do you want to start with as we get into this weekend? First game is at noon Eastern or 5 p.m. in Dublin, if that's where you happen to be watching, Georgia Tech, Florida State.
Don't have anything yet for that first game. I might be looking at some Haynes King props once I get a little closer to game time. Really interested to see Florida State obviously lost a bunch of guys to the NFL, and Norvell did pretty good, well to hit up the transfer portal this year, but lost a lot of guys, impact guys on the defensive line. I could see King scrambling a bit, so I might be looking at his rushing prop in a few days here, so maybe we can talk about that on Saturday. But right now I've got Nevada on its team total under 14.5, and they are playing Southern Methodist in week zero. They were one of my darlings last year. Really, really good defensive. Like, Preston Stone will get a bunch of the headlines this year. Obviously, they're transitioning to the ACC, but that defense was what really powered those ponies for me last year and helped me win a lot of bets with them. Their defensive line is really, really strong, and I really like them in this matchup against Nevada. Most of their impact players on that defense are back. This is a defense that ranks 7th in defensive success rate, 5th in sack rate. It's like I said, most of those guys that made those plays are back. And another tough year here for Nevada, I think. Maybe going in the right direction. They have a new head coach, but they returned just 6 starters on offense. And they had the 6th worst offensive success rate last season. SMU held opponents to below this number in 7 games last season. While the case can be made for their futures that maybe this season won't be the easiest for them in the ACC, even if though their schedule is just kind of like middling when you look at some of the other ACC schedules, it is a step up in competition, and the defense did beat up on a lot of lower rung teams. Luckily, Nevada qualifies as one of the lower rung teams, so I think they're going to have trouble scoring under 14.5 points in this one for them.
There are some things in this life that will never surprise me. You back in SMU will never surprise me. it has done you well, and I only hope when the day comes you need to get off that train, you do so before it's too late.
I think it's pretty much when conference play starts. That's the talent level it's the ACC, but it's better than the AAC, the conference they were in last season. And not only did they play an AAC schedule last season, it wasn't a really tough AAC schedule for the most part. So it could be a little tougher going this time around.
One would assume my week zero pick that I want to lean into is moving on me. It was neg 10 yesterday. It was neg 10 and a half before we started recording half an hour ago. And I just checked while you were talking. Montana State is now an 11-point favorite. Ooh. At New Mexico on Saturday. And I'm still not going to flinch. This number was always too low. And 11, we're starting to get there. I would honestly put it closer to 13. It was always too low because people are going to doubt the FCS. Montana State would be a top 4 roster in the Mountain West. Earlier I was talking about is UNLV, Fresno State, Boise State. Montana State would be just a few runs below them. Montana State is that good of a team. New Mexico, it's going to be really bad. Like, it's going to be awkwardly bad. Only 10 teams return less production than the Lobos. There might not be 5 teams in all of FBS who would be favored, who'd not be favored against New Mexico on a neutral field. Of course, they don't play any of them. New Mexico, it's like I cannot convey to the casual football fan how bad New Mexico might be this year. The defensive back 8 returns just 3 starters. There's nowhere to look on this roster where you think, hey, that's a good thing. Bronco Mendenhall has his work cut out for him, and it's just not going to go his way in week zero, not against a team as experienced as Montana State is. And people don't realize that FCS teams often are just that experienced and well-rounded, especially at the top tier of it.
Yeah, it's the quality of football there has really, really – obviously everybody knows about North Dakota State, but the whole upper level of that division has become much better in the last few seasons.
Now, before we get out of here, the corporate overlords and producer Mario have reminded me to remind the world, like and subscribe and tell your friends and so on and so forth. We're doing our best here to get this rolling this college football season to cover all 134 teams of the FBS level. And before we go, we're going to welcome in another vantage point, somebody who I will say is smarter than Andrew and I, which some days is not saying that much. Good friend, above average college football mind, Parker Fleming. Parker, glad you can jump in and join us for a little bit today. How are you?
Doing great, man. Thanks. Thanks for having me on. Always glad to swoop in here and talk a little ball. Caught some few minutes of you guys talking when I hopped in there. So love that you're doing this show. Love that you guys are I mean, football is happening this weekend. I don't want to undersell that.
It's exciting.
A societal good, like so many wrongs are about to be righted because we can focus on college football. Although I don't know if you guys are worried about, I'm already worried about people posting and being like, bro, this is what I would have run because I won my dynasty in CFB 25. Like, what is this coach doing? The posting is going to get real bad before it gets better with the unveiling of CFB 25 this summer.
Oh yeah, the memes. There's going to be plenty of playbook memes and videos posted to TikToks and Twitches. It's going to be a bit of a mess, but a little fun too.
You know, I've played two games on there in total. I went 2-0. My first win was Jacksonville State over Liberty because I had to stick to the truth. And so I'm not going to be the one putting out those memes unless Rich Rodriguez throws too much against Liberty, at which point I will have no choice but to go apocalyptic online.
I just got upset by UCF as West Virginia last night, so I'm still in shambles over that. Now I've lost my spot in the Big 12 title game this year, so it's gonna be tough recruiting this season for the Mountaineers.
Parker, my instinct says you want to talk to us about Group of Five futures, but I worry that you just heard me endorse Montana State and you are wearing a Montana Grizzlies sweatshirt, so you might have some other grievances to file.
I mean, I think that's really hard with how big the line has gotten. This is, you know, obviously you could say this in the preseason shows of, you know, Montana State should absolutely be a favorite there. Love Bronco Mendenhall. Obviously, that's going to be a rebuilding project and going to take a little bit to get where they want it to be at New Mexico. Montana State's just a really solid fundamental team in terms of physicality, and they do want to run the ball. I mean, I was at Brawl of the Wild last year and watched what happens when they get behind. And that's really the only way I think New Mexico could kind of get them in a situation where Montana State has to pass more than they want to. And then maybe they could grind it out and say, hey, you know, we do have some athletes here, but it's really hard to see a path to victory for New Mexico. The only issue for me is that is a really, really big line. I was kind of wondering just as a what if, like, would you rather bet Montana State minus, it's up to 10.5, 11 now at this point,
11
against New Mexico, or would you rather bet Colorado minus 9 versus North Dakota State? That's kind of a weird litmus test, right, of how you feel about these FCS, FBS games.
I can tell you my answer is I will always bet on the offensive and defensive lines, which means I will not be betting on Colorado at any point in the near future. Deion Sanders, man, brought in his Louie. Do you know what he's still carrying on the offensive defensive lines? Grocery bags.
They did bring in some athletes, but yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's just going to immediately gel. Then I'm sure you guys saw the training camp clips of guys, you know, missing catches, but they cut it together. But yeah, that was just an interesting kind of, you know, how do you look at both of those? And so that, I think that line's gotten a little bit big. I know you guys talked to Nevada SMU. I was wondering about an over there. I think it's at 56.5, 57, depending on where you're looking. And I mean, that takes, you know, to get over 56 is what SMU's got to score 42 and Nevada, you know, 14. So looking at the implied score there, I'm really interested if SMU will know that we're on a new path of, you know, they're up to the Power Five. This is how Power Four, this is how a team should beat a team like Nevada. I wonder if they're not going to come out and try to drop 60 on them. So I think SMU could get the over by themselves there.
And ooh, I believe I saw today that Rhett Lashley announced, of course, Preston Stone is starting, but he made it clear that Kevin Jennings will also play as a number two quarterback, which starts to imply they're going to want him to have two or three genuine possessions, where which could turn, let's say, a 28-7 game into a 42-14 game just because they're not running up the score. They're trying to get him good reps.
Exactly. They're still running the offense, getting reps. Right. Absolutely. I like that kind of second half there. And Jennings acquitted himself decently in what, two or three games last year when Stone, yep, was hurt. They beat Tulane. Yes. But on the back of that defense. So yeah, I don't expect a lot of scoring out of Nevada, but I think SMU could take that total, just by themselves. The other thing I was looking at is you guys talking futures and win totals. Are we still seeing Liberty to win the Conference USA at like minus 200? How does it feel like that is underpriced? I have that at like minus 350. That seems like, I tweeted this out not to get all George Costanza last year, but like, I just can't foresee a world where Liberty loses a Conference USA game ever again. Like, there's no circumstance where I can imagine it, just because they are the resources are so different. The talent is so different. They have, you know, one of the better quarterbacks in the nation in Caden Salter, who was at an SEC school at one time and had certainly has the pedigree. It's crazy. I hate kind of, you know, talking about these bets that are so negative to one side, but I think Liberty at minus 200 is
minus 195 at FanDuel.
Yeah, I think that's underpriced. I think it should be way more. So that one's one you've got to talk about with value overall, if that's one we're looking at.
Yeah, big juice doesn't mean you don't have expected value there. So,
great.
Do you really want to lay neg 200 in order to get to the conference championship game and be a 10-point favorite? Because I think that's what you're looking at. And that's why I play Jacksonville State. Because I'm looking to get to the conference championship game. And yeah, I'll be a 10-point underdog, but I'll be sitting on what did I get that number? 750. So that's what I still see value elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one where I think the Jacksonville State is a good asset to have. Another one along those lines, I think UCF is at plus 800 in the Big 12 this year. And I think that looking at something like that, do I expect UCF to win the Big 12? No, but do I expect that to be a valuable asset towards the end of the season? They do play Utah, and that would potentially set up, you know, a rematch in the Big 12 championship. But looking at what they're going to do in the run game and looking at the extent to which the Big 12 is becoming a smash mouth league, you've got to imagine a Gus Malzahn on offense with KJ Jefferson, RJ Harvey, and Penny Boone. I mean, that's with just two of those guys out there, that's 500 pounds a man in the backfield. They averaged 3 yards before contact on design runs last year, only team in the nation to get close to that. They've got 10 guys with at least 4 years of college on the offensive line. They're in the two deep. They're super deep. I don't want to, you know, single game bet in the conference championship for UCF. But if you're looking at somebody who's going to give you value over the course of the season and put you up in a position to profit, I think that UCF ticket is a nice one to have.
Especially with their Big 12 schedule. It starts with two of the easier games you could have, TCU and Colorado. You get Cincinnati as your third Big 12 matchup. Yes, you have to go to Iowa State and go to West Virginia, and you close the season with Utah. But go even just 1-2 in those three games, yep, and you're going to be in the conversation exactly for number two in the Big 12.
Exactly. Yep.
And so that one, again, is that's more fun to me. That's almost like assets, you know, trading and kind of figuring out value and all that there. But I think that's a good one to have. One that's along the same lines, Douglas, you remember last year I was pretty excited about Louisville missing Clemson and Florida State and being a good play. And that paid off. Virginia Tech is not quite the same argument there. But they should be really solid. Drone should make some steps forward in taking the easy pass, for instance. And so I think that that's going to give, you know, that's going to pay off down the stretch as well. Being, you know, having them, I think you can get that at plus 1,000 right now to win the ACC. And so that's another one that still feels like it's a nice asset to have as things are shaking out down the stretch.
That offense really turned around when Drones took over under center last season.
Took over for who, Andrew? I don't quite remember.
They didn't play games before Drones. They forfeited every game before Drones. Douglas is pulling up one. For the uninitiated listener here, Douglas and I have a long and contentious history, and we're not friends in real life, despite what he might say on the show and the internet. But Douglas is pointing out we made a side wager with no stakes about Grant Wells throwing 1.5 interceptions or more. And I said under, knowing that they were going to – I said he's fine. They're going to bench him if he's bad. And what did they do? They benched him after he threw an interception. And then they brought him back in the fourth quarter, and God love us, he threw another interception. So I washed my hands of that. That's not my fault there.
I'm not going to look up the stat right now, but in Grant Wells is like last 24 games, he threw 25 interceptions. Some things in life are inevitable.
The other one, I know you guys are wrapping up, and I don't want to monopolize the entire time. I think the benefit of this is being a short and chaotic hit, but I think that one that I'm interested in, I like App State over 8.5 and App State to win the Sun Belt at plus 260. I think they could get blown out in their two games that they don't, that they shouldn't be favored in, and still be favored in 10 other games on their schedule. It's not a very challenging schedule. They got a lot of consistency. Aguilar's like a legitimate good quarterback, and there's a lot to be said for Sean Clark having the same group of guys year over year. And so normally I'd kind of, you know, put those in contrast of like, do I like the path for the over or the path for the conference championship better? And the answer is yes. I like both of them for App State. I think they're very solid. And if Boise State gets in their head about quarterbacks and the American has some nonsense happening, I think you could look at something like App State sneaking in the playoff, being the Sun Belt champion, right? It depends on some rankings with what Liberty does, but I like App State a lot in this situation.
Doug is just like beaming. He's so happy right now. Like he cannot be contained.
I am not only the proud owner of an Appalachian State-esque pipe, I'm also the proud owner of Appalachian State at 16-1 to make the playoff. I believe you can still get that nowadays at 12 or 13-1. I am betting against Boise State and Liberty and Memphis when I make that decision. And I've already made it clear, betting against Liberty, Appalachian State gets to hand Liberty the loss. Appalachian State, Parker, I am with you. We finally agree on something.
I love it. The playoff only scares me because of that Liberty game where I do think Liberty will be favored pretty well, but Liberty's strength of schedule and App State's ability to maybe steal a game there makes that certainly interesting.
Four words for you. Welcome to the Rock.
you gotta go to Boone, right? You gotta deal with it and everything. And we'll see how that goes. And obviously, you know, Liberty gets hurt, has to put in a new quarterback, for instance, that's certainly on the table with a big fallout there. But yeah, App State was another one I kind of liked as well in terms of getting weird with some G5s. The other one I've been talking myself on and kind of, you know, continuing to talk despite the fact that said I was going to wind it down. I don't think that Texas A&M to make a playoff is a bad flyer to have in your back pocket. I think I can see the vision for Texas A&M very, very strongly. Going to have a talent advantage. You got Colin Klein, you got Connor Wegman, who is talented and showed some really good underlying numbers and in limited scope. We're going to take the playbook from 1500 pages to about 50 pages this year, run a lot more fundamental football, play well and play hard for Elko. I think the vision for A&M is absolutely there.
I think that trimming down that playbook and just trying to let that talent shine is going to be do them a world of good.
It will be curious, given the bookends of their season are Notre Dame and Texas, both at home, which 12th man, blah, 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 blah. It will be curious to see how things are different on November 30th compared to the hype and excitement that will certainly be there on August 31st.
If you're Texas, you're hoping to God there is nothing to play for. You want to be undefeated walking into that game or something. Like you want no questions walking into Kyle Field that last weekend of the season.
It could be a nightmare.
We can only hope. But for now, the good news is there's college football this weekend. Yes. Parker, we're going to let you get on with your day. Thanks for jumping in. Hopefully we make this a weekly occurrence, and I will try not to pick games directly counter to your wardrobe.
Well, we'll see how that goes. My wardrobe's pretty limited in terms of Montana Grizzlies being predominantly featured there. So as long as you keep those guidelines, and yeah, I'll be like an outdoor cat. I'll be around sometimes this season. It'll be a lot of fun. Excited to listen to you guys. Thanks for having me, and we'll talk again soon.
That should about do it for us, right, Andrew? Are we home?
Yeah, I think we did it.
Let's get out of here.
Episode number one in the books.
Let's get out of here before week zero. Reminder, we're going to go live Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern. So like, subscribe so you don't miss us. And until then, jump, chirp at Andrew on Twitter. He's at @covers_Kaylee. I'm Douglas Farmer. I'm at @D_Farmer. We will see you Saturday morning live at 9 a.m. Eastern.